Chapter 6. Summoned. Kent stared into the endless gray of the shroud, waiting for Nessa to get ready for school. His fingers caressed the hilt of his stalwart blade. He squinted, spotting two figures approaching.
"That's far enough," he called, meeting them outside. "State your business."
"We're here to corrupt your daughter,"
Elsha smiled, laying a hand on the shoulder of her niece, Casey.
"Good morning, Inspector Kent,"
Casey greeted, executing a perfect curtsy.
"Casey," Kent replied.
The door opened behind him, Nessa stepping out.
"Good morning, Lady Elsha,"
she greeted, giving a curtsy of her own. His daughter moved to join Casey on the sidewalk.
"Hold on a moment," Kent admonished. "Do you have everything you need?"
"Yes, Papa,"
she replied, annoyed.
"Do you have everything you need?"
Kent reached into his breast pocket and pulled out a fresh pair, holding it out to show her.
"And I even packed a spare," he grinned.
Nessa nodded in approval, mood shifting from mothering to childlike as she greeted her friend. The two began whispering immediately, entering their own world as they walked to school.
"Excuse me," Elsha cut in. "I thought we were all walking together this morning." "I'm not a child anymore, Auntie,"
Casey huffed. Nessa kicked Casey in the ankle. Casey gave her a hurt expression, but got the message.
"Apologies, Auntie. That was rude of me,"
she said, contrite.
"Thank you for the offer, but we'd appreciate the time to ourselves this morning."
She finished with a small bow and a self-satisfied grin. Nessa looked upon her with approval. After an appropriate amount of time, Casey lifted her head, turning on a heel to continue their walk. Elsha smiled, not pursuing the argument. Kent couldn't help a grin of his own. When Casey had begun her turnabout year in the district, he had truly thought Nessa would be corrupted by her. But things had swung the opposite way.
"Nessa's a good influence,"
Elsha commented, mirroring his thoughts.
"I can't understand how a child so sweet came from a grump like you."
"Agreed," Kent grimaced. An image of his daughter with red eyes infected his thoughts. "She's a good one," he stated, reassuring himself.
"I do wish Nessa would exert a little more influence when it comes to fashion."
Elsha pointed to her niece as the two girls shrank toward the horizon.
"A black dress in this heat."
"She's trying to be like you," Kent pointed out.
"Well, I hope she fails," Elsha muttered.
"She's a good kid, Elsha," Kent noted. "And you're not so bad of a role model as you think."
"She's not as strong as she lets on," Elsha grimaced. "I'm glad she has Nessa as a friend."
They watched in silence as the children turned, moving out of sight. Kent cleared his throat.
Let's get going, he grunted. "I have a feeling we're in for another busy day."
Kelsine Square was already bustling when the inspectors arrived. Shop owners, restaurateurs, and hawkers were busy setting up for the lunch rush. But the Mercantile Exchange had the greatest crowd. Dozens upon dozens of well-appointed men and women shouted at podiums in front of a tall stone building. Men in uniform stood behind those podiums, hundreds of information pipes behind them spitting out prices and yield information for all sorts of commodities. Above it all, a statue of Ashteel Kinder, the prophet's quartermaster, looked down upon the proceedings, observing their fairness with his holy eyes. Kent grimaced as the network pipes rattled and shook from behind the statue, extending from the building like a stiff head of hair. Beauty is sacrificed for the sake of efficiency. More miracles of progress. Kent moved through the crowd, Elsha acting as a plow to clear their way. They crested the HQ stairs, moving to open the double doors.
"Citizens! Citizens!"
The inspectors paused, hearing an unfamiliar voice carrying across the space. Kent turned, confused.
"Cadenites!"
the voice called again. The aged inspector squinted, spotting the speaker below. It was an old man standing atop a wooden box, a far cry from the young man, who was their usual crier. The priest was hunched over, weathered by time and effort.
His words cut through the crowd like a blade, his presence full of wisdom and grace. When he spoke, the people listened. A group of 20 had showed up this time, laborers and factory workers mostly, their faces lined with stress and caked in dirt, eyes tired. Kent grumbled, noticing small missives gripped in the hands of several men. Elsha patted him on the shoulder, handing him a rumpled page. "I snagged one of these on the way in," she explained. Kent frowned. She'd probably pickpocketed a poor Cadenite. He unfurled the paper, reading the message.
"I'm sensing a pattern here," he chuckled.
Elsha nodded in agreement. The two shifted their focus, the old man beginning his work. He raised an ebony hand, drawing the crowd to silence. The hand was scarred and callous like a knotted tree, seasoned through a lifetime of labor.
"Cadenites," he started, stillness falling over the crowd. "I come to you from afar, bearing a message from the darkest parts of the Nevariate. Beneath the earth where light fears go."
He paused, meeting the eyes of his parishioners.
"A message from the crystal mines."
There was a ripple through the crowd. People leaned in. The mines were as good as myth in Caden City, used as a crutch for the hardest of times. Whenever things were bleak in the low-ranking districts, "At least it's not the mines," was a Cadenite's comfort. The crier observed the crowd's reaction, an enigmatic smile growing on his face.
"Yes, I worked the mines," the old man started. 20 years I toiled in darkness, spilling sweat in the earth to bring crystals from its maw. Crystals, I was told, that would power the wonders of Caden City."
The old man swept his arms out, encompassing the cityscape. The listeners followed his gaze, turning toward the stalwart tree, its canopy barely visible through the shroud.
"Well, maybe we'll get a better view tomorrow,"
the priest chuckled. There were a few grunts and huffs of dark laughter.
"For 20 years I worked in those mines, and I paid a great tax for my efforts."
The man swept his dark eyes through the crowd.
"I see many of you have paid the tax as well,"
he said, somber.
"I'm not talking about the apostles' tithe. I speak of the physical tax, the laborer's tax."
Many of the listeners nodded, understanding.
"For in my 20 years, the highest price I ever paid to the apostles was not in pennies, but in pain. The price I paid was in my back, my knees, in my aching hands."
He pointed to each body part as he spoke the words.
"I'm sure many of you have suffered similar ailments. Unable to clench your daughter's hand, unable to bend down to pick her up."
He shook his head.
"Memories lost, moments lost. Moments that seem so small, but make a lifetime of difference."
There was a disgruntled mutter through the audience.
"They do not know the price we pay."
The priest pointed again to the shrouded stalwart tree.
"But how could they? How could the apostles know our struggle?"
he asked.
"The laborer's tax is not written in the laws of the Horundus. It is not counted in the census, and they could hardly see it from their lofty perch."
A few more dark chuckles. He paused, pointing to the ground before him.
"It can only be seen here, on the ground."
He raised his gnarled hand to the sky once more.
"The prophet's second tenet, peace is found in calloused hands." "I have found that to be true,"
the crier admitted, solemn.
"But the calluses, they have to mean something. They have to have purpose, no?"
There were some murmurs of assent from the crowd.
"I toiled for 20 years in darkness with the belief that my calluses would find meaning in this great city, in districts like this one."
He looked around, searching the square.
"But to tell it true, now that I stand in your midst. I see no purpose here.
He shook his head.
All I see are tired brothers and sisters, taxed to the bone and weary, with only a dim view of what their labors might be making.
He pointed again to the distant tree. The crowd was quiet. A sadness settled over them. The crier let the sadness rest, sealing the point.
But I caution, do not blame the Lord.
That calloused hand rose in a gesture of pause.
For his work is genius. They are something to take pride in.
The old man gave a warm smile.
No, it is not the job of our great Lord to hear our complaints.
The crier shook his head.
But it is the job of Mayor Fezzoline.
He pointed a gnarled finger at District HQ.
A man elected by the people to bring their concerns to the Lord. Where else could the blame possibly lie?
There was a muttering from the crowd.
So tell him of your struggles. Tell him of the price you pay. Make your voices heard so that your Lord might know your pain.
More nods from the Cadenites.
For in my very short time here, there is one thing I can clearly tell. Your Lord does not know the lives you lead, for he would not condone it if he did.
A silence followed the man's words. Eventually, he broke it by stepping off the box, brushing dust from his robes. The crowd dispersed, laborers melting back into the bustling square.
Well, Elsha started. Looks like another bad day for Fezzy.
Yeah, Kent muttered, deep in thought.
For a moment there, I thought we might actually be able to arrest this one, she quipped. But he rode the line quite well.
The inspectors turned, making their way to the marbled building.
This sermon had a bit more substance compared to yesterday's,
Elsha noted, following close as they moved upstairs. Kent nodded.
I bet half the audience were creepers, though, she joked.
I'm not so sure, he replied.
What? You think Lord Croesus isn't monitoring the situation? She asked, incredulous.
No, he probably is, Kent agreed. But the Cadenites certainly are, too.
Elsha shrugged, seeing the point. They opened the doors to the law enforcement offices and were greeted by shouts from across the room.
Gods blast it! Where are those bloody idiots? They were supposed to be here 20 minutes ago,
the mayor screamed. His reed-thin assistant stammered, struggling to respond. A look of relief overtook the man as he saw Kent and Elsha. He pointed frantically, relaying their arrival to the mayor.
What are you waiting for? You bloody dunce! Send them in!
The waifish young man scurried down the hall toward the two inspectors. He stopped in front of them, stuttering.
The mayor requests we heard,
Osha said, moving past.
Thanks, Kent muttered, apologetic.
What took you so long?
The mayor huffed as they moved to sit.
You were supposed to be here half an hour ago.
Apologies, Mayor Fezzoline, Elsha responded. We were working on a lead for the Sentinel case.
No, he perked up a bit. And what leads have you been working on exactly?
It's the Church of the Prophet, Kent answered.
The mayor let out a breath, face paling from the angry red of before. He dabbed a handkerchief to his brow.
And your evidence?
He asked. Kent tossed the Sentinel's message to the mayor. He grabbed it in stubby hands, opening it. There were two images on the paper side by side. The first was of a group of workers on the factory line wearing rags for clothing. Their hands were mangled, blood covering the toys they were building. Next was an image of Lord Croesus as a fat child playing with the bloodied toys, a mountain of broken trinkets behind him. No peace was written below the two images, obviously in reference to the second tenant. The mayor's frown deepened as he scanned the paper.
There was a new crier outside this morning. One suited to deliver a very specific message, Kent stated. That their work is without purpose if Cadenites do not prosper from it. The mayor frowned.
It's 2 days in a row now. So they have to be getting the messages beforehand to plan these sermons, the mayor murmured.
He sighed, shaking his head.
It changes nothing, he grimaced. The source is what we need.
But if the source is the church, what can we do? Kent asked.
It's never just the church, Inspector,
Veseline grumbled, giving him a condescending look.
The church hasn't been an independent faction since the Second Age,
the man admonished.
If this is being run through the church, then most likely some lord is trying to screw with Cretius. Or maybe even the whole bloody family.
The mayor dabbed his face.
In any case, we need to find out how they're getting these messages into the district. Lord Cretius can put a stop to it from there. Hopefully before the Cadenites tear me to pieces.
They're getting close, Elsha poked. Today's sermon was far more pointed. In your direction.
Of course it was, he sighed. The church can't go after the Lord directly, now can they?
Vizeline's lip twitched. He took a deep breath to calm himself, putting stress on his buttons.
Yes, well, the Sentinel is no longer any of your concern, he diverted,
reaching down into his desk. There was a click as a lock was opened. Coming back up, the man pulled out a sealed message, unlike any Kent had seen before. The tube was black, with an intricate pyramidal structure on each side, and the owl and quill of House Vorva in its center.
A message came for you early this morning, the large man said. I suggest you open it.
Elsha sat back in her chair, shocked, refusing to touch the ornate vessel. Eventually, she gritted her teeth, reaching forward to grab the tube with gentle fingers. She took a breath, closing her eyes in concentration. There was a hiss of steam, then a click, as the tube popped open. She reached gingerly inside, pulling out the message. Kent watched in anxious silence.
"We've been summoned to the Ignatium," she whispered. "We are to call on Lord Cretius, under the Black Seal."
Kent's eyes widened.
"What?" the mayor chided. "No clever remarks."
He met both of their eyes.
"I'm glad you're treating this with the gravity it deserves, because you're not the only ones on the hook here."
"They asked for us," Kent said, incredulous. He reached out, examining the scroll himself.
"By name," Veseline stated, face severe. "Don't ask me why, because I haven't the slightest."
He looked at Elsha. Her face was clouded with concern.
"What I do know," the mayor continued, "is that you and your partner will be representing me in the Ignatium. So please, don't fuck it up."
There was a long pause as the words settled. Both inspectors were lost in thought, imagining what a black-sealed mission might entail.
"Inspectors, the first part of not fucking up is arriving on time," the mayor cooed. "So please, get off your asses and move!"